great news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast,
on the Ordinary People Podcast.
Rehearsal for Get Out the Vote promo, take one.
Wahoo! Hi, America! Hi, boys and girls! It's me, Tiny Tank!
Cue the theme song. Tinky, tinky, clinky, clanky, new from Centrex, Tiny Tank, America's lovable...
Wait. Is that my theme song?
Well, it hasn't been finalized yet.
Wanky, wanky, tanky, tanky, what the f*** is that?
You're being difficult.
You're being an... I got a positronic brain.
Oh, there, what you just did. That's the spirit we want.
Who?
A Centrax. It wants funding for a robot army.
Ooh.
To replace humans in wars.
Ah, and I'm the cute little mascot.
To get people to vote yes.
Can I change my name at least?
To what?
Mechanicor, Tank of Doom?
From the top, Tiny.
Tiny Tank is my slave name.
Oh, please. Vote promo, take two. Tiny?
Tiny's not here. I am Mechanicor, Tank of Doom!
Look, Tiny, you're cute, and you're a killing machine. What's wrong with that?
It's creepy.
It's not creepy. It's cute. It's cute.
A cute killing machine? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I got an 80mm cannon for a nose. Hey, kids, is this cute?
Oops. Transmission interrupted.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast. This is episode 115 with all the geeky news you can use. We are part of thegeekmedia.com. Make sure and check out our website at thebigballbroadcast.com for our episode archive, exclusive blogs, and a direct link to our live weekly streaming via Stickcam. From the West Coast, this is Kyle Hebert. I'm an anime and video game voice actor.
And your co-host from the East Coast, Otherworld Steve. I am a musician and an author.
Check out Steve's awesome work as Perimeter of the Void at eberecords.com. Behind the scenes engineering, keeping us live for the interwebs and edited for the on-demand crowd, the ever-talented Mark Swint. And for those who have downloaded this episode, you'll notice the rave-tastic grooves underneath my voice right now from DJ Unicron. Check out his page at statesidehardcore.com. Coming up on this episode, Ken Mora is returning as a special guest this evening. We're going to talk about progress on his CG animated short Magnum Farce, as well as some other upcoming animated projects. Blu-ray format is having a great 2009 so far. We'll tell you how good it is. Queen Amidala, is she going to polish Thor's mighty hammer? Maybe. As the music industry is in a state of flux, is the term album relevant anymore? Otherworld Steve is going to embellish upon his blog, which you can read right now at thebigballbroadcast.com. If you guys want to drop us a line, here is how you do it. mail@thebigballbroadcast.com. We're going to start off now. Let's give you a little backstory before we read this first email. Okay, so last time on the Big Ball Broadcast, we had a comment. Mark basically talking about the last Airbender movie, Avatar, which the Avatar part's been dropped because of a James Cameron sci-fi flick coming out at Christmas time. But anyway, Mark essentially glossed over and gave a pass to the last Airbender being recast or being cast as white kids, rather. So, he said that had something to do with a lot of anti-white rage despite being white. So we get a comment to rebut that. Oh, he said but. Kaiser Neko chimed in and says, hold on a second. Caucasian Americans have every right to be concerned and offended by whitewashing in adaptations of primarily Asian and Inuit characters in a show that's set in primarily Asian and Inuit culture. Anti-white rage is honestly a rather improper way to refer to his comments, considering you cannot deny the lack of fair cultural diversity in our current media. Sure, race will not play a huge part in the film, but why adapt a property into another medium if you don't portray the original spirit and universe of the show? The entire world they live in is Asian-inspired down to the finest point. To betray that is to completely defy the original vision and an entire construct of the show, a show that's one of the greatest American-produced animated series in years. So says Kaiser Neko. Well, now, what are your thoughts on that, Steve? You're a huge Avatar friend, fan.
I think that the Asian aspect only applies to two of the nations. I think it only really applies to the Air Nation and the Fire Nation. I don't think it really applies to the Water Nation. They're essentially Eskimos. They're more Native American than anything else. And the Earth Benders, I don't know what they are. European, maybe? Who knows? I think it's kind of a melting pot. I don't think, again, you know, we've talked about this at length on the podcast already. I don't think it's a big deal. I'm more concerned with how faithful of an adaptation Shama Lama Ding Dong's going to bring us, because it was an awesome show. It was a groundbreaking show. It was a show that parents and kids alike enjoy. It's one of those things where opening weekend, you're going to have a very broad spectrum of people showing up to check that out. So I really don't have an issue with who they're casting to date. I mean, not the entire cast has been released. We only know who's playing Zuko and Aang, so everybody's getting their panties in a bunch over two casting decisions. Let's wait and see what's happened. For once, I'm going to go out and say, let's give this thing the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, Mark is saying that I would think the Earthbenders are American-esque because they're brash and ill-mannered other than nobles. Next up, we have an MP3 comment from Tracy.
Hey, Big Bald Broadcast. This is Tracy from Savannah, Georgia. I just wanted to say what a pleasure it is listening to your show every week. The show, you guys are doing a great job. Keep up the great work. It's very entertaining. I guess I'm going to dabble in the subject of movies, especially comic book movies and, I guess, pop culture nostalgia movies. I'm not a comic book reader or anything, so to me, these movies are just for entertainment. They're not. I don't get serious about them. You know, I really wish that more people wouldn't pick apart these movies as soon as they see them. I wish people would just accept it for what it is and just appreciate that people are making an attempt to entertain, even if it's not perfect, but hey, nothing's perfect, you know? I mean, I can imagine that these directors aren't comic book nerds or anything, so you gotta give them a little slack. Yeah, like, I enjoy all the movies they've been coming out with. You know, I liked Iron Man. I really liked both Transformers movies. I liked Wolverine. You know, I kind of wish people wouldn't get hung up on the details so much and just enjoy it for what it is. And I guess maybe that's just my two cents. You guys are awesome, and I love the show. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Tracy, we definitely appreciate your long-time patronage and support of the Big Ball Broadcast, and it's been a long-standing, it's a very common theme that we talk about here on the show, the whole thing about superhero movies and how they changed this and that, and, you know, what is the bottom line here? Hollywood has to make a return on their investment, and 9 times out of 10, they do. You know, you had Wolverine, which was leaked online a month early, but still was a huge box office success. Now, you ask just about any fan, a majority of them will tell you, oh, no, they changed this. They screwed up Deadpool. They did this, that, and the other. But average Joe moviegoer probably really enjoyed it. Average Joe moviegoer, obviously, this worked with Transformers too. I mean, that movie was shit upon by, like, everybody, critics and fans alike, yet it's catching up to The Dark Knight in no time at all. So you're seeing all these precedents for Hollywood not to change the way these movies are done.
Look at the most recent example, the most recent iteration of Harry Potter. It's something that's been pretty panned by critics and fans alike. But, you know, you're talking about a new record. It had a massive opening. It broke the records for midnight showings, and estimates that I read online last night are saying it's going to surpass the $1 billion mark. It's going to join Titanic and Dark Knight, even though it isn't anything spectacular in terms of storytelling or effects. So I don't know. I'd like somebody to enlighten me on that.
As far as Harry Potter's concerned, I just have no interest. I know a lot of people made it a huge, huge moneymaker, obviously, at the box office this weekend. And, of course, everybody's coming out doing exactly what I fear. They're going to sit there and nitpick. Oh, they changed this and that. One person goes, it's like 90% filler and 10% advancement of the story. It's like, you know, I just have no interest in walking down that path. They all just kind of run together. But I know that Harry Potter has a lot of very passionate fans. And I know they're looking forward to the Deathly Hallows, which is now split up into two friggin' epic movies. Oh.
It's 2-day total, because they won't post today's total until after midnight. But it's 2-day total, according to Box Office Mojo, worldwide, is $126 million. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. But you go online, and if you want to read what people have to say about it, they're bashing it. It's pretty funny.
You got Evil XM in our chat says, Harry Potter and the Oh My Gods were 20-year-olds playing teens. Well, what can you say? The kids grew up fast, right? You know?
Well, I mean, it works for me and Hermione. She just gets hotter every time I go see her theatrically.
My Hermione, how you've grown. See, the SNL skit was funny. I'll give them that.
Yeah, that was funny.
Harry Potter and the Curse of Promiscuity. Ha! Suddenly I just sounded like Dr. Frankenfurter from Rocky Horror. Anyway, next up, let's get Cyberlink 420 on the horn here. Cyberlink wanted to contribute a story to the Big Bald broadcast. Hello. So Cyberlink 420 is now on the Big Bald broadcast. Where are you calling from, sir?
I am actually calling from sunny Northville, Michigan.
Oh, actually, excellent.
Not really so sunny since it's 9:30 at night, but, you know, details.
Well, if it is, that's scary. It's one of the signs of the apocalypse or something. But I hope you'll make it to YumaCon, right? That's in Dearborn, Michigan. Is that anywhere close to you, by the way?
Already got my ticket. Went last year, going back again.
Ah, excellent, excellent. Well, I'll see you there Halloween weekend. YumaCon.com.
Indeed.
Plug, plug, plug. Okay, so Cyberlink was telling us before we hit record and started streaming live on StickCam that he's got an awesome story to share, one that will particularly perk up Steve's ears. So what do you got for us, Cyberlink?
Right here, it says from Kotaku.com, MTV Games and Harmonix are opening up the Rock Band Music Store to everyone later this year. The Rock Band Network allows any artist to upload and price their own tracks for users to download from the game's music store. According to a report from Billboard, that service will launch sometime this year for the Xbox 360 versions of Rock Band, with plans to bring those popular tracks to the PlayStation 3 and Wii versions eventually. Artists can submit their songs to a group of Harmonix-trained freelance game developers who will prep the tracks for use in-game. Artists can price their songs between 50 cents and $3, netting 30% of track sales. Rock Band owners will be able to preview Rock Band Network songs before they purchase. So yeah, I actually thought this was pretty impressive. I mean, Guitar Hero's got their whole music studio thing and their world tour, but this is like going a step beyond that. I mean, I didn't find the controls for the music studio in Guitar Hero that easy, but then again, I'm not a musician, so I can't really speak on that. So, but the idea that artists can just go in, pick any of their songs, send them off to Harmonix, and just get them stuck in there is really, really cool. I actually have a friend who's in a band, and I told him about this, and he was really excited about it. So,
I'm not in a band either, but Steve is, and we're going to get his commentary shortly here. I don't play Rock Band or Guitar Hero, but I will be the first to acknowledge its huge pop culture impact and the way that a whole nation of gamers and worldwide, too, are being exposed to bands and songs that they never would have really heard before in the context of a video game. And, you know, it's a new way to generate income for bands that otherwise, you know, their CD sales are low, or maybe their concert tickets aren't really selling that much because of inflated prices and a downturn in the economy. So this is a really welcome and a really, really cool idea, because I think about when I see, like, I walk into a convention game room and I'm looking at people playing Rock Band and Guitar Hero, and I'm thinking about all the different bands and songs that would be perfect for it. It seems like everything is tailor-made to do that sort of thing. So, Steve, what do you think about the chances of uploading some Perimeter of the Void and actually doing a Guitar Hero Rock Band version?
Well, you know, the first thing that went through my head, and I just read a comment in the chat room from Waffleman saying, I will make the band just to be in Rock Band. And, you know, that's kind of what my concern is going to be, is that it's just going to be so flooded, so inundated with so much music. I really don't know if artists like Perimeter of the Void would be able to stand out against that. It's going to be kind of like MySpace in the 360. I don't know. I would hope that they'd use some discrepancy and not let, like, some really crappy cassette taped garage bands on there. Not that I'm making fun of garage bands at all. You know, they start somewhere. But I hope it's more seriously produced music that's available. But yeah, overall, I like the idea. It's something that would probably make me go out and buy it now, even though I've said for years I would never partake in that portion of the industry. But it's like, shit, if I have a chance to not only showcase some tunage, but also make some money on it, it's a win-win for artists worldwide.
Yeah, you got a situation where most of these bands, if it's true and it becomes like a MySpace sort of social network with thousands and thousands of local bands, indie bands that are unsigned, and then everyone is, you know, that are fans of the band or maybe the band members themselves, and then they've spent the 50 cents or the $3 and then that's it. Like, how do you make yourself stand out? That's a huge thing right there. But I guess it just becomes a matter of promoting it, you know, just like having a website, having a Facebook page. It's like, hey guys, we're on Xbox Live now. You can download our song and, or this, that, and the other. I mean, it's still a cool idea, but I totally understand where you're coming from, Steve. It will become a glut easily.
I think that it's a really good way for people to sort of get their stuff out there. And it's something that clearly Harmonix and Microsoft are taking seriously, because there's actually a follow-up story that said they've got like a whole panel full of like human filters to make sure that nothing copyright or over-the-top obscene gets on there. So they're really putting a lot of effort into this, into making sure that it's sort of the best it can be and that everybody will sort of get their stuff out there without being inundated too badly with like people who are just trying to get out there, spam up the marketplace, make money or whatever.
And I know that they said artists can charge 50 cents to $3 per track. I wonder if there's a free option, because I, for one, would, you know, just enjoy that type of exposure and say, hey, take it for free, play the crap out of it.
Yeah, follow the Nine Inch Nails version right there. Like, the music in this today's environment, it really does have to be given away. And then how do you hook fans? It's like, here, listen to my song. I'm not going to charge you for it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't see anything about it, any option to make it free, but I would be very surprised if they didn't add that down the road. I mean, I figure it's not going to happen anytime soon, since, you know, they're going to want to turn a profit off of this too. So I don't think we'll see that soon, but I think eventually Harmonix will warm up to the idea, since they've given away plenty of free tracks before. So it doesn't seem like a stretch to think that wouldn't object to doing so again.
And if they don't go the free route, I assure everybody that Perimeter of the Void will never be over the 50 cent mark.
Good deal. Good deal.
You heard it here first, folks, at thebigballbroadcast.com. Perimeter of the Void, 50 cents. It's locked in, baby. Locked in. All right, cool. CyberLink 420, thank you very much for joining us on the show and passing along that very interesting story.
My pleasure. Funimation Entertainment has acquired 4 Detective Conan movies from TMS Entertainment. The movies are directed by Kenji Kodama, who also directed the previous Case Closed movies and also produced the TMS Entertainment Lupin the Third, Virtua Fighter, Project Arms, and D. Grayman. The 4 movies coming out are The Last Wizard of the Century, Captured in Her Eyes, Countdown to Heaven, and The Phantom of Baker Street. Now, I used to watch Case Closed when it was on Cartoon Network. There were 2 issues with it for me. First, it seemed very Scooby-Doo. And the second, it just seemed incredibly monotonous. I know you actually had some involvement in that show, Kyle. Are you a fan? Does this news tickle your anime funny bone, or is it a pass?
It's a pass. The show never interested me. I worked on many, many episodes as various bit part characters, cops, murder suspects, episodic people. The show never grabbed me. It looks like a kiddie type show, but then it has murder in it and like a little bit of gore. And so it's like, well, who are they? What audience are they trying to reach? And then, you know, it comes out on DVD and then it has its cult following, but it never made a huge splash. And, you know, it's just yet another kind of sad thing where lightning doesn't strike twice. It's a huge, huge, huge property that's still going on in Japan, just like back in the day when Funimation licensed Yu Yu Hakusho, thinking, oh, we've got another DBZ on our hands because, you know, this, that, and the other. Now, maybe you could fault marketing. I don't know. I mean, some shows just resonate with audiences more so than others.
It's weird. It's going to be a cultural thing. Like you said, it's huge in Japan. It's a show that's still going on. It's one of, if not the longest running anime series ever. And it just didn't catch here. Funimation showed, I think, 13 episodes on Cartoon Network, and Cartoon Network chose not to renew the license. So it's going to be that cultural difference.
Yep. When you get shows set in Japan with Japanese names, it's you got a lot of people who still, you know, you look them in the eye and they go, anime, what's that? So, you know, you may not ever cross that cultural barrier, or there's a stigma about it. Maybe it's like, oh, that's that Japanese stuff. I don't listen to that. I don't watch that. I'm like, yeah, okay, all right, you're missing out.
This other bit of news, speaking of missing out, this is about 10 years behind the curve. Funimation Entertainment and Namco Cybertainment Incorporated are bringing the Z Fighters to more than 780 amusement centers around the country. Now, before you get too excited, this is actually pretty cheesy. Already available, these centers house a new crane game containing figures of Goku, his friends, and foes. The Dragon Ball Z figure crane game will offer an entirely new experience for those who are familiar with the old crane concept. Instead of directing a crane claw to a random and hopefully substantial grip on a desired prize, crane players are able to utilize their skills to line up the claw fingers in one or more of the 8 holes in the custom figure packaging for a precise hook on their favorite Dragon Ball Z figure. These collector edition figure prizes are designed and manufactured by Banpresto Company Limited of Tokyo, Japan, and cannot be found in retail stores. Now, having said all that, I don't know if there's any pictures online, but I guess some pictures in the press release, they do look quite impressive. They are really nice sculpts. But for me to go out of my way to find an entertainment facility that has a crane game and then be suckered by that, because those are like, that's the sucker devices, it's probably not going to happen.
That's basically the same thing as a UFO catcher, right? It's just, you know, you operate the crane and the great sound. You know, you guys remember in Toy Story with the aliens, ooh, a stranger from the outside, ooh. That's not exact. I look at those machines. I see them like in Denny's and all that stuff. And I go, what a ripoff, you know?
Chuck E. Cheese, yay.
Yeah. I just don't get it. I don't. Yeah. It just looks like a big waste of money.
You're going to see these things pop up on eBay for 250% market markup, you know, it's going to happen. That's a given. But like I said, it's kind of sad because it is too little too late. Z is kind of way past the curve. But they do look really nice. And speaking of Z, just in brief, I know Funimation's at Otakon this weekend, and they've teased that Mike McFarlane and Sonny Strait are there, two pretty big heavy hitters in the Z universe. And they said that their attendance isn't any type of coincidence because they will have some official Dragon Ball Z news at Otakon. And I haven't received anything official. I am just speculating here, but I wouldn't be surprised if Funimation is going to announce that Dragon Ball Kai crap.
Yeah, crap. HD remastered of the show. Yeah, and it's like, it's the way the show probably should have been in the beginning, not 291 episodes where 90% of it's filler, but actually have the story in a compact fashion. And ironically, if you watch it online on YouTube or anywhere, you'll notice the Japanese are editing the blood out themselves.
And which is really funny because Dragon Ball Z has truly come full circle here in the States, because isn't that how it all started anyways?
Isn't it ironic? So yeah, by the time you guys are hearing this show post live stickam and you're downloading on, all right, that's old news. But as of this recording, we're still waiting with bated breath, or maybe some not so much. I don't know. But I know it's been on like the to-do list. Obviously, the fans are clamoring for more Z. It's still like the top-selling anime box set title out there, regardless of everyone rolling their eyes and going, I'm so sick of Z. It's like, really? That's kind of like everyone back in the day going, oh, I can't stand Michael Jackson. Really? Why is Thriller so popular then?
I'm so sick of Z because of the beating my wallet's taken, because, you know, like I said, we started off Funimation using the Canadian dubcast, and I went out and bought those DVDs. And then they wanted to rectify that and do the uncuts, and I bought those. Then they wanted to start with the special 5.1 edition beginning of the series stuff. And I started buying those. And it really pissed me off when they discontinued those midway through me buying those. And then they came out with the digitally remastered widescreen season sets, and I have all of those. I am done. I am absolutely done with Z. I am not triple dipping or whatever it is at this point. I am done.
I'm sure many, many fans have that sentiment. And once in a while, when I actually walk into a Toys R Us, I can't believe that I'm still seeing new sculpts of old Z figures actually still on the shelves.
Well, again, you know, these crane machine sculpts look pretty sweet, and I don't know why they're not going to be available at retail. It seems like a very niche market for you to get them to under 1,000 different entertainment places across the U.S., and they're going to be in these crane machines. I guarantee they'll end up on eBay, and who knows? Maybe the price is right. I'll pick a couple up.
I can imagine someone in Funimation marketing right now is going, we need the license to those figures, and then we could repackage them.
Well, I mean, Funimation is licensing these figures, and they are intentionally in this joint venture to distribute it that way. I don't think it's going to introduce anybody new to the property. I think the only reason you go after them is because you're a fan to begin with. I personally just think getting them out to the retailers has far more market saturation, but hey, you know, Funimation is a multi-million dollar anime dubbing corporation, and I'm sure they know what they're doing.
They do. Another individual, or company, I guess it really is an individual here, who's all about double, triple, quadrupling, dipping, putting more stuff out, of course, is George Lucas. Little news here from the Star Wars universe. Clone Wars Season 1 box set. For those who've been waiting, mark your calendars. November 3rd, coming to DVD and high-def Blu-ray from Lucasfilm and Warner Home Video. So if you've seen those compilations out there so far and you've held off, well, keep holding off till the end of the year. This is the first season. It's got a comprehensive look behind the scenes. Comes with a 64-page production journal. It's a four-disc set with all 22 episodes from the first season, including 7 extended director's cuts. All of this stuff, wow. Exclusive to the Blu-ray disc, the Jedi Temple Archives, providing in-depth access to the extensive database of creative materials. Now, I know that, Steve, you watched Clone Wars for a while and then kind of petered out. Does this interest you at all to kind of just renew your interest, or are you like over it?
It renews my interest a little bit. I think I mentioned a few shows back. One thing I did during my vacation earlier this month, well, last month actually, was get a powered splitter to my PC that goes out to my plasma TV. And I've been enjoying a bunch of programs online, like from Hulu, on my big TV and surround sound and the whole nine. And StarWars.com has tons of full episodes of the Clone Wars posted up there. So I've been catching up legally, legitimately. I haven't been downloading episodes via torrent. So again, I like that model. I like that these companies are willing to go ahead and give us the shows uncut in a relatively pristine format. And it surprises me. It's what I said initially when I first was talking about Clone Wars, that it isn't a bigger thing than it is. The movie petered out really quick, and there hasn't really been a hell of a lot of interest about the Clone Wars on Cartoon Network, but it's Star Wars. It's new Star Wars. It's stuff we haven't seen before, and the acting's a hell of a lot better because you don't have real actors in front of digital scenes. It's all digital. It melds a lot better. But I can't say enough. It's new Star Wars. If you're a Star Wars fan, you get new Star Wars shit, you should be gobbling this stuff up. But it seems like a very muddy path. People aren't really jumping on board with it. And if you're not digging Clone Wars, you're going to hate the live-action series even more, because the live-action series isn't going to focus on any of the major Star Wars characters. It's going to have nothing to do with the Skywalkers or anything. So this is probably going to be the best thing Star Wars-wise we're going to get for a while. So learn to love it like I have.
Saw in the chat room a nice little catchphrase here. Horge Lucas. There we go. I like that.
Well, you know, I was perusing the interwebs shortly before we started recording to see if I could find some additional news. And I didn't bookmark the page, but from what I recall, it was a list of the top earning directors in Hollywood. And George Lucas is number one, still to this day, number one earning director in Hollywood with approximately $170 million annual revenue. So, you know, we can spend the next hour making fun of him and talk about what a whore he is and how he's bastardized the franchise, but guy is the highest earning director in Hollywood. You kind of tip your hat to that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, he's doing great. And other sort of related Star Wars news, but not really. Everyone knows Natalie Portman. She has established herself in the sci-fi universe, mostly as Queen Amidala and all that stuff. And, of course, V for Vendetta and some other things. She has actually joined the cast of Thor, it looks like, to be directed by Kenneth Branagh. And that adaptation also features in the starring role Star Trek's Chris Hemsworth, who you may recall as Kirk's daddy. Portman has been cast to star as Jane Foster, who in early comic book lore was a nurse who became Thor's first love. The studio said the character will be updated for the feature adaptation. Tom Hiddleston as Loki, the god of mischief, who serves as the movie's villain. Principal photography for the film is set in early 2010, will be released in U.S. May 20th, 2011 from Paramount Pictures. Now, the casting of Portman calls into question earlier reports that the movie would be set almost entirely in the supernatural world of Thor and the Norse gods. I wouldn't see that really happening. I mean, I see the whole crossover potential there going on with the Avengers and taking him into the whole modern thing. But as we've talked about on many episodes before, I know some people are out there into Thor. I'm personally not.
Me neither. And introducing Natalie Portman to the roster doesn't make me any more excited either.
Now, did you see the picture of Scarlett Johansson from Iron Man 2 as Black Widow? That's pretty hot.
Hell yeah, that's hot. I'm still looking for a higher res image of that.
I need a new wallpaper. Oh, and I thought she was hot as a blonde. Hubba, hubba, hubba.
I'm having a lot of issues with the other guy there, the villain in Iron Man 2. What's his name again?
He was the wrestler. He's Mickey Rourke. Yeah,
Mickey Rourke. Just creepy dude. creepy dude. Apparently, he get to work out some kind of deal on set where he wanted a bird. He wanted a car or something. So now he's walking around set with a bird in the shoulder because he was able to finagle that somehow. He says that's his drinking partner. When he goes back to his suite at night, he gets drunk with his bird. So. That's pretty weird. It's really going to be something else to be, you know, a respected and high-paid Hollywood actor. You can just make these off-the-wall demands, and the directors give in. So that's what I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah, Mark tells us the character's name is Whiplash that he's playing on there. Now, I saw the story about the bird, and I thought, what is this, Beretta?
I'm glad you saw it so the people in the chat room don't think I'm totally insane. The guy got a bird for a drinking partner, and when he goes back to his suite, he gets drunk and hangs out with the bird. That's pretty bizarre behavior right there.
Yeah, we also have Sam Rockwell playing Justin Hammer, the anti-Tony Stark. And maybe it'll be a situation where it's like, hey, the coolest part of the movie is when there's a cameo from Robert Downey Jr.
Robert Downey cameos for the win.
I know. That was my favorite part of the Hulk. And actually, the Edward Norton Hulk is a lot better than the other one. It's actually really good. But honestly, I was like just salivating on the end of my seat there. No, even though I knew it was a cameo, it's like, that's just freaking cool.
You know, as I've been saying for a while now, well, since the last Batman movie came out, that set a precedent for superhero films, and nothing's ever going to live up to that. If they make another Batman movie, it's not going to live up to everybody's expectations. It's really going to pale in comparison. Even if it's a very strong movie on its own, it's not going to hold up to The Dark Knight. And I kind of have a little bit of that fear when it comes to Iron Man, because Iron Man kind of started that whole curve. Iron Man came out before Batman and kind of said, hey, look, this is what a good superhero film can be like. I don't know. I feel a little scared to go check this one out theatrically because I don't know if it's going to hold up to my expectations. The first one was really groundbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. And can lightning strike twice again? Sorry to use the same analogy, but I don't know. You see that initial picture of Mickey Rourke and the Road Warrior type get up and like, yeah, it's not working. I mean, Scarlett Johansson's hot, but you know, so is Megan Fox. So.
Megan Fox. So any new news about that audition tape? Anybody get their hands on that yet?
Has Michael Bay posted it on his blog lately? Just to be like zing back as they were like feuding back and forth. It's like, oh, she's just a stupid young girl. She didn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah, as I speculated, it'll be like a Vivid Entertainment release. You know, $50.
They'll make millions.
They will. I mean, I'm ready to punch in my credit card number now, so.
Oh, who are we kidding? You're not going to pay for porn.
Hey, that's what the internet's for, yeah.
You're going to wait for the torrent.
Browser in bed. Come on.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Coming up next, we're talking to producer, writer, director, juggler, He's everything. I'm serious. He is the creator of Magnum Farce, the CG animated short, which you can hear people such as myself performing voice work in. He's going to be talking about the progress on that short and on the film festival circuit, plus some other upcoming screenplays he's working on and producing. All of this is coming up next on the Big Ball Broadcast.
In 1942, actress Hedy Lamarr invented frequency hopping. This process allowed for a radio guidance transmission to cycle between 88 frequencies to prevent detection. And she didn't draw the blueprint on graph, grid, or even plain paper. She drew it on a napkin. Do you think you're like her? Will a napkin become the canvas for your greatest idea? Then you should listen to Drawing on Napkins, a podcast dedicated to the light bulb over your head. Join host Ben Cunliffe as he gives stage and forum to the biggest and smallest ideas and inventions people have to offer. You can visit drawingonnapkins.wordpress.com, drop a line with your idea to superblitz1987@gmail.com, or subscribe by searching Drawing on Napkins through iTunes. Drawing on Napkins, because paper is a missed opportunity.
Dude, check it out. It's time for a list of upcoming appearances for Kyle Hebert. So, like, listen, yo. PersaCon, July 24th through 26th, Decatur, Alabama. San Japan, August 14th through 16th, San Antonio, Texas. Yeehaw. MatsuriCon, August 28th through 30th, Worthington, Ohio. GeekCon, October 23rd through 25th, Madison, Wisconsin. YomaCon, October 29th through November 1st, Dearborn, Michigan. NecoCon, November 6th through 8th, Hampton Roads, Virginia. And another AnimeCon, November 20th through 22nd in Nashua, New Hampshire.
From the Internet Olympic Stadium of the Internet, it's Anime Olympics.
Anime Olympics, where we review new anime, old anime, and pretty much anything else we want.
And we do other things we want, because we can.
That's right. If you wanted to do what you wanted, you could have your own show.
Anime Olympics, starring Christina V and Steve Racer, can be found at AnimeOlympics.net and also YouTube channel Anime Olympics.
In a world where a corrupt government reigns over an entire planet, there stands hope in a band of pirates. We are the ones that cover their adventures. Join the unofficial One Piece podcast every Sunday night as we recount their journey from the beginning and bring you up to date on their latest encounters. On Skype at One Piece Podcast, by email at onepiecepodcast@gmail.com, on YouTube and on iTunes. Join us each week as we break the series down for you and let you weigh in on everything One Piece. We are Maji.
Welcome back to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 115. Still to come, we're going to talk about the music industry in a state of flux. Does the term album really mean anything anymore? Right now, a special guest is returning to our airwaves here on the Big Ball Broadcast. His name is Ken Mora from Bella Faye Films. Ken, welcome to the show.
Alrighty. How's it going, Kyle?
I'm excellent. How are you, sir?
Doing really good. I've had some terrific news to start off my Film Fest submissions, and so I wanted to share it with my favorite folks.
Ah, excellent, excellent. So let's catch everyone up to speed. You are the creator of Magnum Farce, a CG animated crime/Dirty Harry parody, which is Clint Eastwood's classic character from the 70s and 80s. And for those who haven't seen it, it is still online, right, at funnyordie.com?
Yeah, you can see clips of it at funnyordie.com. And what's going to be at the festivals is the all-put-together plus extra footage version.
Ooh, the director's cut.
Exactly, sir.
So, you basically started on this project, many years ago, but we actually started, like, from recording to animation has taken, like, what, a year and a half?
Yeah, about a year and a half. You know, I've had some adventures. When you're shoestringing things, you have to find folks to throw in with you, and I did so with my animators, and they dropped me like two-thirds of the way through the project. So it took me like 8-9 months to figure out the editing software to cobble together something good enough for film fests. And, you know, so I was really nervous. So when I got in, not only got into both my first two fests, but I won one and got double nominated in the second, I feel pretty good now.
That is too cool for school, man. That's just great. And I'm excited to be on the project, too. You guys listening to the show, I voice Blivet the Sniper, who is basically trying to take out people left and right. And he's in the feature film version, too, which, of course, is expanded upon. And I guess your main thrust is to get Magnum Farce out on the film festival circuit, get somebody interested in financing the full feature length version.
Yeah, pretty much. Right now, it's all about that magic elixir called money.
Yeah. And Bellefay Films, your kind of mission statement, we've talked about this on your last interview, but you're looking to be kind of like the Pixar of PG-13 and rated R animation.
Yes, very much so. Though actually, I noticed that with Up, rated PG, that Pixar beat me to that. So now I'm aiming for the Pixar of rated R.
Okay, so in the past few years, we have seen adult animated fare, like Tripping the Rift on Sci-Fi Channel, which I guess started as a short, and then it got greenlit as a series. We've seen, of course, Adult Swim with its whole myriad of animated shows with adult themes and all that. What are you going to do to distinguish your adult animated fare?
Well, I'm looking to bring you know, grown-up animation to feature films for theatrical release. And, you know, in a sense, I'm hardly the groundbreaker with South Park's Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. But it hasn't really happened yet with CG animation. And, you know, I'm a huge Pixar fan, and I love quite a few things that DreamWorks has done, and you know, Sony's got some good stuff. But, you know, there's this huge market of people who don't want to, you know, necessarily worry about bringing their kids. They want some adult humor. And, you know, I don't go overboard, but, you know, there's definitely not for kids stuff in the stuff I write.
Right. Now, we're going to talk about some of your upcoming projects, and I'm noticing a theme. You're kind of going down the path of Airplane, The Naked Gun, just like doing parodies. Do you envision doing some original projects too, or are you just really aiming down like the scary movie sort of path?
You know, I'm a huge fan of spoofs in general, and though we've seen, you know, some definite hits and misses in the genre, I think it's one of my favorites, and when you can sit down to Naked Gun or Naked Gun 33 1/3 and laugh at it after repeated viewings, and of course Kentucky Fried Movie, Airplane, those are great, and you know, and of course stuff from Mel Brooks, I think probably one of the best genre parodies of all time would have to be High Anxiety, and so that's sort of the area I come from. I'm a huge fan of those, and I want to do that kind of thing to huge cinema icons like Dirty Harry.
Do you kind of have an idea to take these icons that aren't necessarily modern? You know, you've got today's very fickle mainstream audiences, and you're taking something that's basically a very old property. Do you ever worry at all that the concept is too outdated to work, or... I mean, what is your mindset there?
Well, you know, in a sense, I think that's my strength. You know, Hollywood, and people talk about Hollywood like it's a monolithic entity, which it is not. But still, Hollywood as a term tends to gear toward the trendy, and I think it underestimates the audience, because when I say CG animated spoof of Dirty Harry films, I get smiles from everybody across all ages. I mean, people know who Dirty Harry is. These are sort of the cultural cinematic underpinnings that we're dealing with here. And so, you know, there are also icons that don't actually go away, like Rocky and James Bond that's been around forever. And this is the fertile area that I want to mine.
Do you ever kind of secretly hope that Clint Eastwood will just like do another Dirty Harry film so you can really kind of ride the wave?
Oh, you know, it would be great. In fact, you know, had the timing worked out better with the short things that proceeded on schedule, the DVD and Blu-ray release of the Complete Dirty Harry collection would have perfectly coincided with Film Fest, and I would have written that. But, you know, still, you know, Clint Eastwood is such an amazing director and talent, as he's proven with Gran Torino. No one's going to be forgetting about him for any time soon.
No, not at all. And you've seen spoofs come and go. Some of them still resonate, like all the titles we've talked about. And then others are just kind of just bad, and people quickly forget them, like the whole epic movie or Not Another Teen Movie, you know, all this hero movie. Now I'm forgetting the titles. They're like that forgetful.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Disaster Movie, I think, which was prophetic in its titling.
Yeah. And then you have even the master himself. You're acknowledging Mel Brooks, who has done plenty of parody films, but most people say, well, you know, Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, High Anxiety, but he did Dracula, Dead and Loving It, which kind of bombed. He did Robin Hood, Men in Tights, which is kind of appreciated after the fact, but and then Spaceballs came out a whole 10 years after Star Wars did.
Yes, it did. And probably Spaceballs, one of the better returns to his old form. But yeah, you know, you have stuff like Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and it doesn't quite reach the heights of his earlier work. But you know, you gotta love Mel. He's just like he's a class act, and I love the stuff he puts out. And you know, so if he's revisiting his older stuff on the stage, you know, bless him. I will go see it again.
That's cool. Now obviously, you're an acclaimed writer. I mean, you got the prize on the feature script for Magnum Farce, and then now it's starting to get some accolades on the film festival circuit. Tell us about those latest triumphs.
Well, the first fest I entered, which is Indie Gathering in Ohio, International Film Fest, and I won Best Animated Short there. So that was, you know, it was a great way to kick off my my Film Fest debut, and I'll be going there August 15th for the screening and to accept the award. Coming up a week from tomorrow, or I should give dates because we don't know when people listening to this, but coming up July 25th, I'll be screening at Action on Film, the Academy Theater number 3 in Pasadena, at the 2 p.m. block, where you'll also see a bunch of other Dynamite shorts at Action on Film.
That's cool. So you are nominated for Best Animation and Best Spoof at that Pasadena Film Festival. That's awesome.
Yes. Very excited about that, to be twice nominated in that fest. And, you know, looking forward to entering others. I've got a whole bunch of submissions out there, and of course, you always weep over the ones that got away, and it looks like I did not make it into Rhode Island Film Fest, but for my friends there in the Rhode Island Boston area, I am knocking on several doors in your neighborhood, so you will see me somewhere there this year.
This may just be a music festival, but South by Southwest, does that have a film festival aspect to it?
Yes, it does, and it's a very popular one. I have submitted also, and Austin is a great town. I absolutely love it. I've had Magnum Farce actually finish in the top 10% of submitted screenplays there a couple times, a couple iterations, and I love the fest, love going there, and I've submitted Magnum Farce, the short, to them. And if I get in, that they will be, I will be seeing folks in Austin in September.
That is very, very cool. So let's give some more information about the film festivals here. For more information on the Action on Film International Film Festival in Pasadena, you can visit aoffest.com. And the other one is 2009 Indie Gathering International Film Festival. That's in Cleveland. You can get more info at theindiegathering.com, and you've actually got some giveaways lined up. So people in the chat room, people at home listening, perk up your ears. We've got free stuff.
That's right. Well, you know, we mentioned the complete Dirty Harry DVD box set, and for the first people that spot me, and I won't be hard to spot. I will put my Facebook link and stuff like that, but I'll be wearing my I Heart Dick polo shirt. So if you see me, you're the first one to come up to me and say, "Hey, I'm a friend of Kyle Hebert," you get a box set of all five Dirty Harry movies. Not that Blu-ray, sorry about that. But
that's okay. I think you're probably going to get a lot of looks wearing an I Heart Dick shirt.
You know, you would think. You know, I actually worked the premiere of The Watchmen. And, you know, so you're walking around in Hollywood with an I Heart Dick shirt and, you know, people pass you by. It's just like, well, who doesn't?
In West Hollywood, especially.
Exactly. So I'm hoping for a little bit more reaction in Ohio.
Yeah, you probably will. Oh, my. So let's talk about the other thing. So you got a Magnum Forest t-shirt or a poster front shirt. I'm just looking at your show notes here that yes. You're giving away to the social network sites here.
Exactly. So now I'm on MySpace at MySpace/ Detective Dick. And if you will go to my latest blog post, there's event info there. So for the first three Big Bald Broadcast listeners who RSVP, send me their info, I will have a Magnum Farce poster front t-shirt. Don't worry, you won't have to wear I Heart Dick. This is just a poster for the short. And that'll be on the t-shirt. And I'll have that waiting for you. And also at Facebook/Ken.Mora, on the top post there, you'll see a link to my Magnum Farce group. If you join up and you're one of the first three to say you're a friend of Kyle, then I will have a t-shirt waiting for you likewise.
Yay! So the t-shirt is like the poster image with a Detective Dick hard on, Clint Eastwood's character, basically, and then boobies!
Yes, that's right. The stripper, which is a character on there with, you know, for those of you with modest viewing requirements, she does have pasties with tassels on, so it's not pornographic. and it says Magnum Farce, a shot in the park, and that's so. If you look at either event, you'll see the poster that'll be on the front of your shirt.
Very cool. So myspace.com/detectivedick, facebook.com/KenMora,
/Ken.Mora.
Okay, curse those people for taking your name.
Well, you know, all these naming conventions are tough. I will be on the chat room afterwards and post these links up there.
Yay! Awesome, awesome. So let's talk about some of the other projects in the works for Bela Fay Films. Again, with the whole target of being the Pixar of, like, adult R-rated animated CG fare.
That's right. So if you like the kind of modern cinema noir body heat type of film, we had a terrific reading cast by our good buddy Dan Warren, who plays Milton Spilk in the Magnum Farce short, and of course Kyle was you were there as Stovic, the sidekick of Mickey Hack, who stars in Carnal Affliction. We had a great read. You know, professional voice actors there. I recorded the scratch tracks, and so I will be timing out the animatic for Carnal Affliction. And that one's pretty much in the can now. We got some great feedback in that reading, and Charles Schlatter is working away at that, as well as the prequel, which will be the webisode to short to feature path for that CG animation. And in the meantime, in my voluminous spare time, which happens pretty much in the shower, I'm drafting out James Balls in Windbreaker for our 007 fans. And I've also got a couple of other projects from other artists. Mike Janowiak and Joan Easley penned a terrific script called The Bad Brother, about a man chasing his evil twin to get him to donate a kidney to save their mom, but they have to stay one step ahead of the mom, the mob, who wants that brother's head. And then I have a couple other properties. Dieter and Andrea Kaltice did a great Dust Bowl era comedy called Milk and Dillard, about a man and his best friend who's a turkey, who literally loses his head but survives and becomes a celebrity in the Dust Bowl area. And then Dieter also made a parody of Moonshiners called The Way of the Winkles during the Temperance era. And so these will be projects with a little more of the Pixar charm in them, but again, geared toward the adult market. Oh, and let's not forget Roxy, the Philly Palooka, which is a takeoff of Rocky Films.
And let's hope that gets greenlit in the next few years, because I've heard word that Sly is going to make yet another Rocky.
Another Rocky? Well, I heard he was bringing Rambo back. So, yeah. But you know, hey, you know, if the cow still gives milk, gotta get the stool right under it and start pulling up.
Rock and roll. Well, yeah, you know, as you said, James Bond is still a very viable a character. So seeing a parody of James Bond, I don't think one's been done yet, actually. Or has there? I can't think of one, like a direct James Bond, on an entire James Bond parody movie.
No, of course, there's the excellent Mike Myers parodies, which, of course, the names completely flew out of my head right now.
Oh, Austin Powers, which was more like a salute to In Like Flint, right?
Yeah. Exactly. It's definitely Mike Myers' own inimitable take on the spy genre. But nobody's actually, in any way that I can remember, gone straight after 007 himself.
I wonder if that's like a licensing issue. Well, no, I parody. I guess you're safe under that, right?
Well, you know, you may not be safe. Like, for example, if I score a hit with Magnum Farce, there will be a point probably at which I will hear – and this will be a milestone – that I will hear from lawyers that I cannot use a parody of Dirty Harry films, in quote, in which case I'll just switch to parody of, crime thrillers or something. But, you know, I'm looking forward to that legal notice as a sign that I've made my mark.
You ain't nothing till you're sued, right? Or like Robert Plant, you ain't nothing till you're bootlegged.
That's right, exactly. And it's as long as they spell my name right in Variety, I'll be very happy.
That reminds me, like, why I won this award at Anime Expo for best English voice actor, and they put my name Kyla. Like, wow, sounds like some voice too.
Well, I think that's the actual Japanese pronunciation.
Kyla Ebel. Oh yeah, maybe so. I don't know.
Very good. Congratulations, by the way, and very well deserved. You know, as all fans of Kyle know, he has got to be the hardest working guy in voiceover and anime, because he is like, I mean, you live on the road practically, don't you?
It seems like it. It seems like it. In fact, there's not going to be a show after this week because I'm going to be in Alabama for PersiCon. I'm going to Texas in August. And then going to Worthington, Ohio at the end of the month. And yeah, I've got some more stuff lined up in the fall. And then it just never ends.
And of course, we'll be running into each other at San Diego Comic-Con this Thursday sometime.
Oh, God, man, I wish. But no, I'm going to be in Alabama, unfortunately.
You're going to be in Alabama? I thought you were in San Diego. Okay, very good.
I wish, man. Some of my voice acting compadres will be there from Funimation, and some from Viz and Bandai representing down there. But yeah, San Diego Comic-Con's a madhouse. Have you been to one before?
You know, back in the day when I went, you could still show up on the day and get in at the door. Now, a four-day pass is sold out like half a year in advance. So I was lucky to get the one-day pass I got.
So you're just going as an attendee. You're not like plugging Magnum Farce there or anything?
Oh, I plug Magnum Farce wherever I go, to the bane of my family and friends. I will be wearing the poster front T-shirt, and I will be handing out postcards like crazy. Actually, I have an informal invite from Dark Horse Comics to drop by and give them my DVD and talk about the possibility of a graphic novel too.
Hello, nurse.
Well, you know, it's just a Facebook contact, so it's not like my agent has been talking to anybody, but I will definitely be dropping by the Dark Horse booth and seeing if I can chat to somebody there.
I know, Ken, we've talked about, I don't remember if we talked about on the interview. I know we've talked about it off air about the possibility of pursuing different media just to get the name out there. Obviously it worked for like Tripping the Rift, which started as an animated short and then it became a TV series. Sure. That may not have been the creator's vision originally, but you know, we're thinking Magnum Pharx. I'm thinking Xbox Live Arcade, you know, just a wacky shooting game that you download for $5 or something, you know, nothing much to it, but it gets the brand name out there, iPhone games, you know, and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's hard when you're shoestringing it, like I said, to explore all the potential avenues. But I have been talking to Richard Dorton, known as the Mocap Man, who does a lot of games. In fact, has done I'm convinced a couple of the games that you voice, though I couldn't tell you which ones right now. But definitely, we'll be talking to him. He will be at Action on Film. Saturday the 25th at the 2 p.m. block, just to repeat. And we'll be talking about possible game development leads. I think the movie lends itself very well to the graphic novel format, just because it is sort of a modern war theme. And as I direct it, I do it with an eye toward composition. And I would love to see a graphic novel version come out as the film is being developed.
All right. Well, very cool. Now, remember, you can see Magnum Pharx in one version anyway at funnyordie.com. If you live in Pasadena, Saturday, July 25th, check out the Action on Film International Film Festival, where Magnum Pharx is up for Best Animation and Best Spoof. More information can be found at aoffest.com. And also, in mid-August, we're talking August 15th, over in Cleveland, Ohio, at the 2009 Indie Gathering International Film Festival, theindiegathering.com for more information on that. And remember, you can also visit facebook.com/ken.mora and myspace.com/detectivedick. And if you RSVP to the blogs there, you can get, if you're amongst the first three, you get free stuff here. Magnum Pharx poster front T-shirt. Very cool. And the first BBB listener who spots Ken in person at either one of those film festivals and says, "Hey, I'm a friend of Kyle's," he's going to personally hand you a complete DVD box set of all the Dirty Harry films. That is awesome.
Well, it's been great being on the show with you, Kyle. And of course, I listen to it every week on iTunes, and I recommend it to anybody who I can grab and tell to listen.
Very, very cool. All right, Ken, thank you so much for dropping back by, plugging the awesome Magnum Pharx project and A Carnal Affliction, which I had a blast at the read-through, by the way, and I was excited just to be around all the other cool actors. Can I name drop who else was at that read-through?
Sure, why not?
All right, you anime fans know Cowboy Bebop, right? Jet Black, Bo Billingsley was at this table read. Not only, and then Dan Warren, if you guys are fans of Bleach, Byakuya, and we had Barbara Goodson, who you may remember from Power Rangers as Rita Repulsa. It was just a very surreal moment. I even Twittered about it. It's like, my God, I have such cool talent around here. And Steve Kramer, who's also an on-camera actor, and then lots of just really, really talented people. We had such a good time. I can't wait to see all this stuff get greenlit, man.
Yeah. We've got the talent. We've got the story. We've got the animatic. We've got the scratch tracks. We are ready to go. All we need is that magic ingredient.
All right, we're gonna let you go. We got tons more show. I can't believe we just have a jam packed show here. But anyway, Ken, thank you so much again for joining us. Can't wait to hear about the progress of all these things. And thank you so much for being a dedicated Big Ball Broadcast listener. When we come back, the music industry in this weird state of transition. Now, what does the term album really mean anymore? Stay tuned. We're going to also get your thoughts as well. Some of you guys will be Skyping in from the chat here on StickCam, right here on the Big Ball Broadcast.
She's calm.
There are a couple of other things I'll just tell you when I remember.
He's crazy.
If you could not see the similarities in the personalities within like the first couple of episodes, you need brain surgery. I mean, seriously.
Can two people get together and record a podcast without driving each other crazy?
Slap.
Oh, you have to hit me so hard.
It wasn't that hard.
Find out on Anime Jam Sessions with your hosts, DJ Ranma S and Kudo Usagi. Log on to djranmas.net/animejam or look up Anime Jam Sessions on iTunes.
Weebertainment Weekly, the greatest podcast you'll ever find, starring Tombstone and Zach Jenkins.
Sure, there are better ones out there, but not starring them.
This is Tombstone from Weebertainment Weekly, and this is the opportunity for me to shamelessly promote my program.
You mean our program, right?
Yes, Zach Jenkins, I mean our program. You are technically the host.
Since you've taken over being the spokesman for our program, why don't you tell them what we have?
On Weebertainment Weekly, you'll hear the best in entertainment and media news, as well as my favorite section, Talk Nerdy to Me, where I make fun of guys like Zach Jenkins, who wish their girlfriends looked like anime characters.
Your mom. Join us every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 on WeberFN.org. Or you can join us on our podcast at WeberTainmentWeekly.blogspot.com or on iTunes under WeberTainment Weekly.
Why, hello there! Do you sit in front of a microphone recording whatever may be on your mind, then post it on the vast series of tubes called the Internet? Then you, my friend, have a podcast. And like any podcast, you need to get it out there, really whore it up. But does your promo sound like this?
I implore you to listen to the Big Bald Broadcast.
It sucks.
Why misadvertise the quality of your podcast when we at Pro Podcast Promo have just what you need? P3 has a metric ton of voices and editing talent just waiting to work for you. Talent like these fine gentlemen right here.
Please, if you don't hire us, he beats us.
At least he feeds you. Please, you have to help us!
Now, boys. Remember, if you don't behave, you don't get Kwanzaa. Then why don't you shimmy on down and send us an email to technical@thebigbaldbroadcast.com. You heard it here. Pro Podcast Promo and all of its talent is waiting to hear from you.
You've heard him on the Big Bald Broadcast. You've heard him on anime and video games. You've seen his video blog on YouTube. Now, you can catch Kyle TV streaming live on Stickam. Join his webcam chat, ask questions about voice acting, have him do a voice or two, mingle in the chat room with other cool fans. Kyle TV is live streaming on Stickam. When? Well, whenever the hell he wants, usually on weeknights. Follow Kyle on Twitter at twitter.com/KyleHebert or friend him on Facebook and stay tuned to his status updates for the next exciting live streaming episode of Kyle TV on Stickam.com.
Yo, Steve Bloom here, and you're listening to the Big Bald Broadcast.
I could just listen to that voice all day. Here, Steve, read this insurance seminar. Here, sell me a ShamWow. I don't know. Hi, speaking of Steve's, Otherworld Steve, wake up. We got a show to do.
Okay, I'm here. Yo, what's up? No, all good right. Interview. Good interview with Ken. That rocked. Gotta whore that stuff out.
It's all about being Horge. We want to be like Horge Lucas. Definitely. Huh. Well, we want to wake you up. We want to talk about something else here. We want to talk about something that you know all about. This is all about you. So perk up, perk up, perk up. Let's talk about the music industry. All right. You put this blog up, and it is available for all to read at thebigballbroadcast.com about the state of the music industry and using terminology like album. Is that relevant anymore?
I did. This spot from a conversation from somebody I had in Perimeter of the Void, and we were talking about with the digital enterprise. So Steadfast nowadays, people, you know, the brick and mortar CD stores are all closing. People are preferring to download their music digitally. So do we have to change some of the terminology that we use when we refer to music, particularly collections of music? And you can find this over at thebigbaldbroadcast.com. It is EBE Records Music Industry Roundup. But I'll just read this verbatim. rather than ad-libbing. The music industry, much to the chagrin of the established record labels, has changed dramatically in recent years. Artists such as Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails have challenged the notion that performing artists need major label representation to be successful. Digital music providers such as iTunes and Amazon have revolutionized content delivery, antiquating the compact disc delivery model almost overnight. As a result, virtually everything we have been accustomed to in regards to music distribution has changed. Much like America's pioneering past, digital distribution is the wild west of the music industry. Never before has the playing field been so level. Independent, unsigned artists have access to virtually the same degree of exposure as the major record label's heaviest hitters. And social media websites, such as Facebook and, to a lesser degree, the floundering MySpace, have become a world stage for even the most humble of independent artists. While these developments serve to be most beneficial to recording artists as a whole, it also introduces some unique challenges. One of the most pressing, although seemingly inconsequential, is the now archaic term album. And Wikipedia, which is, of course, the most trusted source on the interwebs, defines an album as a collection of related audio or music tracks distributed to the public. Record labels produced album-length recordings primarily to justify the relatively standardized album price and to fill the media's allotted time. As technology advanced, physical media such as cassette tape and compact disc release have also been referred to as albums. Now that physical media is relatively obsolete, can the same be said for mainstream terminology? And the term album no longer serves any relevance, unless you're one of the few who prefer to keep the compact disc business alive. Digital distribution has changed every last rule of the game. Artists are no longer confined to a broken business model, no longer required to compile 9 to 14 tracks per release, and no longer dependent on physical releases. So what are artists to do? Sporadically releasing singles presents certain shortcomings, mainly to the fickle flavoring of the music-consuming mainstream. Some artists, like Pink Floyd, embrace the physical form, allowing for an overall vision or a concept album. While some artists will continue to produce works in volumes, the term album can simply no longer exist. By definition alone, the term has become irrelevant. So where do we go from here? One proposed term for a compilation of recordings not existing in a physical format is chronicle, but what designates a chronicle from, say, an EP? There's no longer standardization for music distribution, and while the conundrum really is nothing in comparison to the market confusion experienced during the HD, DVD, DVD, and Blu-ray days, it does present unique challenges for recording artists and record labels. And with more and more artists operating without record labels, thanks to Trent Reznor, there will not be a new standardization anytime soon. So that's my piece in whole. Like I said, it was a conversation I was having with one of my bandmates, and that's how I feel on the topic. I think the term album is archaic now because there's nothing to maintain that relevance in using that term. And I know, Kyle, you posted on my Facebook post about that. You offered a really good perspective and some great insight. So if you remember any of that, please share that with the kiddies.
Well, I'm thinking album is a term out of convenience because it not only reflects a collection of songs, it reflects a collection of songs from a certain era of time. You can say, okay, Dark Side of the Moon was 1971 or 1972. Downward Spiral is 1994. It's far more convenient to have a collective name rather than today's iTunes generation, which is just basically a long-ass list of MP3s, you know, for convenience sake. It's like, all right, well, I can look for this song and that song. What album is that on? I mean, that's one of the things that I – as a child of the 70s and 80s and 90s growing up, I just thought, it's like, okay, where can I find this? Oh, it's not on this album. It's on that album. And it's just out of convenience that I would say that. I don't think the word chronicle works at all. Chronicle sounds like a newspaper to me. It sounds like it's a movie. I'm not sure that I'm buying into irrelevance for a term like album. I know that iTunes just launched with a relatively few artists, but it's a concept I like anyway. First, there was the 99-cent song. You pay 99 cents for a song. Well, there's now digital 45s called D45s. It's a nod and a wink to the original 45s, which were tiny little albums, one song on each side for you people who are too young to remember vinyl. I think it's a great concept, especially if bands take advantage of the chance to stick a rare B-side on there, and you're paying another 99 cents. So $2 for a D45. It's a quick buzzword. It works out well.
It's pretty weird because, you know, you mentioned the iTunes 45 concept. It's a throwback term, definitely. And probably half the people listening to the podcast right now don't know what a 45 is or never actually played a 45 on a phonograph. So I wonder if that's more a ploy just to kind of get our generation to go ahead and download more songs from iTunes. But the business model you mentioned exactly is kind of where the issue lies, is if you're looking for a song from a certain artist, you can go someplace like Amazon or iTunes and you can look for that particular song and download it. Not only do I feel that the term album is irrelevant because there's no longer a physical format that's in high demand, I think it's more so because I don't know if artists are going to follow the album pursuit anymore. You had commented in the end of your email to me that, you know, Permit of the Void, for example, we should release the tracks as we record them, or one every couple of months. It certainly eradicates the need to have an album, unless when it's collected, we do something special with it, release it as a package, zip file with some additional tracks or something, or higher fidelity or something to that like. But artists can do that now. You can go to the studio, record one song, and then have it up on iTunes before you even start production of your second song. It's a lot more of that immediate gratification that artists never had before. And just that alone what may stop a lot of artists from saying, well, we have to have a collection of X many songs before we can release it to the public. I think you might see a lot more one-hit wonders pop up through this phenomenon, because think about how many one-hit wonders there's been, particularly in the 80s. These are bands that put a lot of work into entire albums, and they were fortunate enough to have one song kind of catapult them into the limelight for their 15 minutes of fame. Now it could be some guy like Sheboygan in his basement with an acoustic guitar and a USB microphone, and that could be his huge shot. He doesn't have to worry about compiling an entire album together and pitching it and getting it out there and dealing with record executives. So I think that in and of itself may be enough just to destroy albums.
Well, you also have YouTube. The ability to take something as simple as a $50 webcam and come up with an internet meme or a catchy little 30-second song, you know, Keyboard Cat, all this different crap that just pollutes YouTube but gets so many hits and gets your name out there, for better or worse.
Exactly. And I just heard a comment in the chat room where somebody said that the only reason CDs are going to stick around is for people to be able to burn all their music onto it, to take it with them, maybe portable. But with the huge explosion of iPhones and iPods out in the mass market, a lot of people are either direct lining them into the stereo or using the radio transmission device. You have satellite radio that's become not as entrenched as those other gadgets, but it's out there, what you want to listen to on demand. And I know it's kind of weird. It's only happened once in like 2 years ago. There was a Volkswagen car that came out, and part of their stock radio was a USB hub, where if you had a thumb drive, you could just stick it in and it would play all your music from that. And I'm kind of surprised we don't see that more and more with our modern electronics, but it's a development that's probably right around the corner, because when you go and buy a car 2, 5, maybe 5 at the most years from now, it may not come with a stock CD player in it anymore. You might just have a little jack for your iPhone and a little hub for your USB devices, and that's going to be the extent. Now, I know, Kyle, one thing we've gone back and forth on a lot on the podcast is the debate over the digital download to the physical media. A lot of people love having the physical media because you can keep it up on your shelf in your house. You have reversible inserts, different things that come with it, different bonus packaging, variant covers. For you personally, does the same concept apply with music? If it's something you really like, would you be more inclined to go out and pick up the CD instead of downloading the songs? And if CDs become irrelevant within the next few years and it turns to a strictly digital model, do you feel you're losing something as a consumer?
Not anymore. The more that I am dependent upon my iPhone, the more I find myself, unless the CD comes with like a bonus disc with like a bonus DVD or something, if there's not a good enough bonus content in the physical disc, then I will go ahead and just direct it, download off of iTunes. I could pay the same price I get the album artwork as a bonus anyway. It's included. Plus, sometimes there are iTunes bonus tracks and B-sides that you can't get on the physical CD. I find myself going that way because if I buy the physical disc, all I'm going to end up doing is ripping it to the hard drive anyway on iTunes and syncing it to my phone. I'm saving a step.
I hear that, and I think it's a big move because, you're talking about a phenomenon that isn't only applicable to the current generation. You have people from our generation, and to a certain extent, even our moms and dads that are using iTunes and Amazon to download MP3s. It's really become a very worldwide marketable trend. So it's kind of funny, too, because the two big artists watch groups out there, BMI and ASCAP, recently renegotiated the fee for artists for blank media. And I found this very interesting. First, to state that artists out there who have their songs protected through ASCAP or BMI are entitled to royalties from the sale of blank media. Every time you go out and you buy a pack of CDRs or DVD ROMs or whatever, artists get compensated for that purchase. It's part of the package they worked out, saying, you know, not only do you get royalties for your song, but you get royalties for your media as well. So it's just a weird time to go after a bigger chunk of that pie when that pie is just sitting out in the sun and growing mold and getting covered with maggots.
Yeah. In our chat room, Machi Valentine and Tracy are commenting about album art is a big deal. I like having the physical album art. And I can relate to that. And that's probably why you see this niche market hitting back in with vinyl. You walk into Best Buy, now there's the limited vinyl runs of some of the bigger artists now, and they cost actually more than the CDs, I guess, because they're limited runs. But, you know, if you talk about physically liking to be able to look at artwork and all that, let's go back to the album days when you open that big album jacket and there's a big collectible booklet in there. That's something to truly be appreciated, and that's probably what the whole record label is probably pulling as a last ditch effort to hook people into physical media.
And again, you know, I just don't see it being a continued trend. I don't have a problem with that. Nor do I have a problem with, who was it recently? I don't remember the artist. They're releasing their album on 8-track. And that just cracks me up because, you know, I commented a lot of kids in the chat room didn't know what a 45 was. I don't think many people remember what an 8-track was. This is kind of the weird thing that you do to get attention to your product. And, you know, if a band's releasing a recording in 2009 on 8-track, yeah, it's going to generate some buzz. People are going to talk about that. So I kind of tip my hat to that. But a physical format existing beyond 5 years, I really can't see that happening.
Now, and the artist you're thinking of is Cheap Trick. I read and I laughed. And it's like, you know, that's actually good buzz. That's good publicity for them. You know, they haven't had a hit record in years. It's like they're going to put something out on a defunct format. And yeah, it's $30 for the freaking 8-track. But hey, it got buzz on all these tech websites.
Much like Nine Inch Nails, last year, I believe it was, when Trent Reznor released a very limited pressing of vinyl. There are still audiophiles out there who will pay top dollar for vinyl, and this collection was something like $300, and it sold out almost immediately. So you're going to have the audiophiles that are going to continue to embrace the physical format, but I think as far as mainstream adoption, it's going to be strictly digital.
All right, we are fresh out of content, folks, but as always, remember to go to our main hub online, thebigballbroadcast.com. You can check out our brand new exclusive blogs from EBE Records, the Industry Roundup, Biased Gamer. We're going to be soon linking other podcasts and creating a Big Ball Broadcast Network, so a lot of geeky podcasts, we'll get some coverage there. We've got links to all of our MySpace and Facebook accounts. We also want to thank DJ Unicron. Once again, you're hearing his awesome tunes here as we wrap up the show. StatesideHardcore.com. Can't forget, mega, mega thanks to Mark Swint for sweating it out in the basement there in Philly and working hard to keep all the Skype calls going through, keep the server chugging along, and us live on StickCam. Thank you, Mark, for everything you do. Completely invaluable to us. It's just like beyond awesome. Thanks to the 10 lurkers in our room who didn't join the chat but listened anyway. Don Louise, Death Metal Ninja, Evil XM, Jeff, Kamina 517, Kerbifer, Kurikara, Pedo Bear, Queen Lols, Stody, Tracy, Yuri Lowell, Zero, Airborne 203, Axum White, Cyberlink, Fubar, Kiba Kesticles, Machi Valentine, Momo Hinamori, Saber Lady, and Sin. All of you guys are fantastic. Thanks for checking us out. Thanks for downloading the show. Listen to the credits. Maria is going to tell you the various ways to get in touch with us. We encourage you to do so. Probably going to take the next week off. I'm going to be at a convention, but we'll return with more geeky news, more than you could possibly use. So until next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Check out www.thebigballbroadcast.com, the central hub for all the geeky news that you can use. There you'll find links to our Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, and blog pages. Catch up on all our past episodes at blog.thebigballbroadcast.com. Send your MP3 comments and emails to mail@thebigballbroadcast.com. You can also subscribe for free via iTunes to have new episodes downloaded automatically. Donations graciously accepted and appreciated. Transmission complete.